EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls
on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all having a good weekend. Tonight's guest is Nicole from British Columbia, Canada, and Nicole will be sharing her more memorable paranormal experiences. Having grown up in a Catholic home, whenever she would talk about ghosts, she was always dismissed or told that once we die, we go to heaven or hell, and that's it. So at the time, she chose not to share her experiences. But tonight, Nicole will be. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Nicole, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on today, and you're calling from British Columbia, Canada.
I sure am.
Lovely, lovely part of the world. Now, Nicole, you have some paranormal experiences to share with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please?
Yeah, so I've had paranormal my whole life. You know, my earliest memory of paranormal experience was probably when I was about 8 years old. And a little background on me, I grew up in a Catholic household. And, you know, I was raised, you know, when you die, like you go up or down, there's no in between. You're not on this earth anymore. And ghosts and things were just not something we talked about. And they weren't, I guess, maybe believed, you know, by a lot of my family members. So everything that I kind of experienced was always just, like my family would politely dismiss it. They were never rude about it or anything like that. But I was probably about 8 years old when I was, you know, in my bedroom. And growing up Catholic, you know, we always have rosaries, and I had my own specific rosary that I always just kind of kept hanging above my bed. And I remember sitting there, I don't know if I was doing homework or just reading. I've always been a bit of a bookworm, and I just noticed my rosary just kind of swinging a little bit, you know, nothing crazy, almost as if the wind grabbed it. So I just instinctively went to go close my bedroom window, thinking that it might be open and, you know, didn't want it to fall off of where it was hanging from. And, you know, my surprise, my window was open. So then I figured, okay, well, maybe it's just the air conditioning that's kicked in and check the vents, and that's not the source of why this is moving. So I just kind of thought, oh, that's interesting. I couldn't, my 8-year-old brain couldn't come up with a logical reason enough, but you know, I didn't instantly go, oh, it's got to be a ghost. So of course, you know, I told my parents about it, and you know, being who they are, just dismissed it to something very logical. You know, it just has to be something that happened in the house, you know, air current moving some way or another. And so of course, I also have a very, you know, as I get into my school years and later in my school years, I do become very science-based. And so my brain is always goes back to looking for logical reasons, of course, when I have these unexplainable events that occur. So that home we were living in, we were there until I was about 12 years old, and nothing crazy ever happened in that house. It was always like, you know, bumps or what sounded like somebody walking, or, you know, cupboards opening and closing. And in that house, it was a 3-bedroom house, and my bedroom was on the main floor, and my sister's bedroom was upstairs where my parents' bedroom was. So I was the only one on the main level that kind of like heard things and I wouldn't say interacted with things, but just observed things that were occurring around the house. And then at 12, my grandfather passed away, and my parents sold their place, bought a bigger house so that they could move my grandma in with us. And that way she wasn't alone. And that was just the best for me, because I was just totally my grandmother's shadow when I was a kid. And she always had this doorbell separate to the main house, because her kind of apartment was at the back of the house, and she'd never hear the door go if somebody knocked or rang the doorbell. So my parents had gotten, or maybe she bought it, I'm not sure, but she got her own doorbell, and that thing would just sometimes go off. And now, you know, we always chalked it up to, you know, it just not working right, or maybe the battery's dying or whatever it was. But my grandmother always joked like that it was my Pepe. And I just always kind of thought that was funny, that she would just have this little sense of humor about, oh, it's your grandfather bothering me. He always loved to get my blood boiling, which when he was alive was true. And so I just always kind of kept that in the back of my head. Like, I think grandma experiences things, but we don't really talk about these things in my family very much, or very openly anyway. So that house was not, you know, crazy with activity. It was usually the same thing. Again, you know, I would hear noises, cupboards opening, closing, walking around the house. Nothing scary, nothing that intimidated me. I do remember my mom telling me one time when we were at school, she was having a nap on the couch, and she, you know, chalked it off to a dream, but I always thought it something more. And she just said that she woke up because it felt like somebody had put their hands on her ankles while she was lying there. And she didn't feel scared. She just said she felt very calm and at peace. And this was, again, you know, not too long after my grandfather passed away, which was her father. So I kind of always had it in my head it was him, and not for any specific reason that anybody ever put that in my head. You know, I was 12 or 13 years old at this time. And then when I got to high school, I actually became best friends with a girl who I'm to this day still very close to, and her house was very haunted. She did admit at some point in our friendship that she had tried the Ouija board. So whether or not something was there beforehand, or she opened a veil of some sort that allowed for this activity, but the activity in her home was very negative. My first personal encounter at her place was a morning when it was just her and I in the home. And this home was big. Like, they had a basement and then a main floor and an upstairs. And her parents they must have been at work. And her brother was already moved out of the house at that time. So it was her and I and her two cats. And she wasn't well that morning. And she got up off the couch and went to the upper level washroom so that she could kind of be sick and just you know, be more private. And I just continued to lay on her couch. You know, we were just waking up really. And, you know, it was just quiet in the house. There were no TVs or radios playing. And attached to their basement living room is their utility room, their laundry hall. And they also have a door from the laundry room that leads to their backyard. And as clear as day, I heard a very deep, gravelly male voice. I don't know what he said, though, but his voice was just so auditory. It was just like, oh my God, somebody's in the house. That back door must have been unlocked and somebody's in the house and I'm the only one downstairs. So I was terrified, actually. I really did think somebody was in her home. And I was frozen. I don't think I've ever really been frozen in fear like that. And I just kind of pulled the blanket just to under my eyes, like as if that was going to make me invisible or something. But I couldn't go upstairs. I just couldn't move. And so when my friend finally came back downstairs, you know, I was instantly like, oh my God, I think somebody's in your basement, your laundry room. Like, we need to look together. And so she, you know, with me goes to the laundry room and there's nobody in there. And so we checked the back door and the back door is locked. And I was like, oh, and I told her what I heard. I was like, it was clear as day. It was this super deep male voice and it just didn't seem friendly. And she, you know, kind of remarked, I told you my house was haunted. And, you know, I'm thinking, I never doubted you, but I think her parents did. And so we, throughout our high school years, like, you know, I would stay with her at her house, especially if her parents were working late. She really didn't like to be alone in the house. And so, I don't know, together we were just braver. And I can remember one time, you know, picking her up before school and her having bruises from falling down her basement stairs. And she had explained to me that it had felt like something had pushed her. And she had been carrying her cat going down the stairs. So she was unable to put her arms out to try and grab the railing or anything. So there was, I think, like 13 stairs. And she went down that whole dang flight. And she was pretty beat up for it. And, you know, we just never kind of questioned that things were just not happy spirit-wise in that home. I can remember a time of her calling me being alone and saying that the upper spare room blinds were violently shaking and she couldn't figure out why and she couldn't go, you know, bring herself to go back into the house. And her dad was working late. Her mom was out of town. And so I went and picked her up and we sat in the driveway for 5 or 10 minutes, like watching these blinds still move. And the interesting part is, like, from the time that she called me and left my house, I mean, it was probably a 15-minute gap of by the time I got my keys and purse and got out the door and drove to her neighborhood. So they had been moving for quite some time. And eventually, like, we just left and I don't know, I think just cruised around until her dad got home. And I will never forget that he just looked at us like we were crazy. He just did not believe what we were experiencing, but we knew what we were experiencing. So her and I have always had an affinity for, you know, ghost stories and sharing encounters and things like that, or going on ghost tours. There was a time when her and I went on a ghost walk in Burlington, Ontario, because I'm actually from Ontario and I've been in British Columbia for about 10 years now. And I think I was, I don't know, probably in my late teens, maybe 18 to 20. She and I went on this tour and there was quite a few people on this tour. It wasn't like a little private, you know, town walk of these buildings that are apparently haunted. And we went more just because we thought like, this is just going to be fun. And like, we weren't really going to experience anything, but we were in this old tavern. And it was said that the lady who owned this tavern, and I cannot remember the name of this tavern, but she was pretty feisty. She was a feisty lady. She, you know, was to be taken seriously, you know, when it came to her business. And if you were being a hooligan in her bar, she'd personally toss you out. And it had been reported that the stairs in their main, the main lot of their building that led to kind of like an upstairs conference room and where their washrooms were, people often felt like they were going to fall down these stairs. And as we're coming down the staircase, there's, I don't know, 30 people around me. Like, we're tightly packed on this staircase. There's no way that if I fell, that somebody wouldn't have easily just like grabbed me because we were so kind of tightly funneled down this staircase. And I had this overwhelming urge that I was going to fall. And I looked at my friend and she looked at me and I was like, we got to get out of here. And she was like, yes, whatever she was feeling, we were kind of experiencing the same anxiety to just get out of there. And I did feel like I was just going to fall down those stairs for some illogical reason. And we did, we just kind of like, you know, politely, as Canadians do, excuse me, sorry, all the way down the stairs until we got out of the building. And as soon as we got out of the building, like, that feeling just washed away completely. So it was just kind of one of the weird things that, you know, were unexplainable that we'd experienced that night together. And then, you know, where we grew up, the city really wasn't teenager friendly. There wasn't much to do. You know, you couldn't attend concerts. There just really wasn't much going on in the early 2000s. And so one thing her and I loved to do was just drive around. Like, we just, once we had our license, we just loved to drive and we'd take turns. We each had our own vehicles. So we would just go for cruises for hours. And there was a night where we were just cruising around the county of the rural area of, to the city that we lived in. And we were just killing time. You know, we didn't want to be at home. We didn't enjoy watching TV and that sort of thing. So we were just always out driving around. And it was like, this is the only time I've ever experienced lost time. And I know that a lot of your guests on your show have talked about missing time in terms of alien encounters and things like that. And I have no idea, you know, what this experience was. And I'm not going to call it like an alien encounter or anything of that nature, but we were driving around and all of a sudden it was like we woke up, for, you know, lack of better terminology to explain it. We were obviously awake. We were driving and we just kind of looked at each other and was like, what time is it? You know, looked at the radio on the dash and 3 hours had passed. And we were like, what the heck? Where did those 3 hours go? Like, we're not even 3 hours from home. How did we lose 3 hours of time? And we both can't recall what happened in those 3 hours. And jokingly, we were like, ha, 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 we were abducted by aliens. But like, we never, ever moved on from that. Like, we never really talked about it. We always just were like, oh yeah, it was weird. You know, remember that one time when we lost 3 hours of time? Like, we just don't know what happened. Like, it was just a super bizarre situation. And then in my early 20s, I actually bought my own house while I was still living in Ontario. And that house wasn't super active. And I think I've come to realize in my life that it's not necessarily the buildings or the homes that are active. I have a connection to, you know, the paranormal world. There's a veil that maybe is a little transparent on my end because I do see things sometimes and I do hear things or smell things. And I'm very, very sensitive to feelings. And I remember just like laying on my couch in my new home and feeling very safe and secure. You know, nothing was wrong. But then I remember just hearing what sounded like branches scratching against one of my windows. And I just thought, oh, that's annoying sound, you know, kind of like nails on a chalkboard. And then I realized it was coming from my upstairs bedroom. And I thought, well, there's no trees on that side of the house at all, let alone tall enough to reach that window. So without missing a beat, I just kind of was like, that's really annoying. Out loud, I was just like, can you please stop that? And as soon as I finished asking that, that noise stopped and I never heard it again. So I just always was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, you know, I think that was the first time I kind of realized that I could communicate and they would hear me and understand what I was saying. Because of course, you know, like this wasn't something I freely talked about with people other than my close friend. I didn't talk about these experiences with my family. So a lot of this stuff, like I've just really figured out a lot later in my life. And eventually, I think I was about 27 and I decided to go back to college. And that required me to move away from the city I was living in. And things for me actually quieted down while I was in college. I think I was just really focused on getting through my studies and getting really good grades so that I could, you know, get back into the workforce. And when I graduated college, I ended up basically, you know, selling off my life that I had built in Ontario and moved to British Columbia. And I actually was managing for a resort for about 9 years. And on this resort, I had probably a lot of most of my encounters since living in BC. I chalk it up to the fact that a ski resort is actually quite a dangerous location. The sport itself is incredibly fun, but it is a dangerous sport. And what I've come to learn now living in the western part of Canada, where the big mountains are, that there are commonly each year, you know, a resort does see a death occur. So for me, you know, knowing when I learned that, it was like, oh, it makes sense why I have so many encounters at this resort. And often in, you know, the months that the resort was closed and not open for guests, I would often be up there alone. You know, it's a fairly good sized resort, multiple buildings, but I would be the only personnel up there. And I would be moving in and out of these buildings, unarming them, and then arming them as I leave, you know, just keeping things safe. And I commonly in their day lodge would hear people walking around in ski boots. And if you're a skier or a snowboarder and you've been to ski resorts and you've heard people walking around in ski boots, like, you know what that sound is. It's not like people in normal shoes. It's very loud. It's very clunky. And at the resort I worked for, they had an upper level for dining. And people commonly, when they were open for skiing, would put their ski boots on up there. And, you know, I'm a snowboarder, so I don't have to deal with this. But, you know, something I see skiers do a lot when they're putting their boots on is, like, you know, they put their foot in and then they slam it against the ground to get their foot fully into their boot. And that is a very distinctive sound as well. So I'd be in the basement of our day lodge grabbing supplies, and I would hear somebody, you know, clear as day putting their ski boot on, and it's, you know, May or June and the resort's closed. And I know I'm the only person in the building because I've unlocked it, unarmed it, and locked everything behind me. So, but of course, there's always the possibility another manager could show up. Of course, they wouldn't be putting ski boots on, but, you know, just always looking for logical reasons as to why I hear movement around in the upper levels when I'm, you know, in the basement is just like, okay, somebody's got to be in this building. And I would go looking around and calling, hello, is anybody else in the building with me? And I would never get any responses. And then kind of as a last ditch effort, just in case somebody did not hear me calling out, you know, I would say, okay, I'm going to arm the building. So if you're in here, it's going to go off, you know, and it wouldn't. And, you know, we always had issues with the alarm system, whatever it may be, you know, usually it's a tech issue, but every now and again, the alarms would go off and, you know, it'd be no common call for it. I can recall being on mountain, actually shoveling some snow away from an area that needed to be cleared. And I was actually in a location of the resort that's permanently out of bounds to skiers and guests alike. And I paused and looked up from where I was shoveling and saw an individual standing above me in like a retro 70s, 80s onesie ski suit that was like that kind of bright red and royal blue clash of color. And I remember thinking, oh, like what is that person doing on this side of the fence? They shouldn't be here. So as I went to go move towards them so that I could get closer to say, you know, tell them that they shouldn't be where they are, that individual was not there. And so I remember thinking, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. And there were other resort staff members that had experiences as well on mountain and in buildings that have had shared their experiences with me. So I had a few coworkers that I could always share those experiences with. In our administration building, the common joke, I suppose you could call it, was that the ghost in that building was named Spook. And there were plenty of us that had either seen their keys in their door kind of get jingled back and forth without anybody being around. I personally had heard, I've many times heard conversations happening on the floor above me. And then I would go upstairs to see who's in and say hi and come to, you know, when I get to that level, that had a separate alarm. And, you know, I'd open the door and then the alarm would be going off for me to put the code in. And it's like, okay, so obviously nobody's in here. But, you know, it would be clear as day. Like you could just, it would sound like a group of people having a conversation and just like laughing, you know, like water cooler chat. And so, you know, we'd always joke, oh, Spook was at it again. Spook was at it again. And then I left that job to take on a different managerial job. And I actually now work a lot of late nights. And I am in and out of a lot of local buildings throughout the night, where I actually manage a commercial cleaning company. So I'm usually bringing stock to these locations for staff, or sometimes I'm cleaning the locations myself and, you know, going in and also just making sure things are kind of up to snuff. And a lot of these buildings are really old. And I have one specific building I do not like entering. And it has a couple of businesses in it. There's like a hair salon. I think there's a youth center. You know, there's an employment center. And then there's also like a family counseling center in there as well. And when you walk into this building, I feel like it's very heavy, that there's a very oppressive feeling in there. Part of me feels that is due to whatever heaviness is getting offloaded in the family counseling portion of the building, and that energy is not being cleared. Where I live as well, there's quite a rich history in mining and the Canadian Pacific Railway as well. So there's a lot of buildings still here from, you know, when the town was implemented in like the 1800s. And our Canada Post Office actually is a very, very old building. And there, I had commented to one of our other staff members that, you know, there's just a weird energy that I walk into in that building if I go in there past 10 p.m. I don't know why 10 p.m., but it's 10, if I get in there past 10 p.m., it's just not a happy feeling. And so her mother is actually like a Reiki master, and she talked to her mom about it. She came back to me saying there is some sort of ancient creature, and she couldn't necessarily remember what her mother called it, but it's of the earth. It's not a spirit. It's not demonic. It's not, you know, somebody who has been on this earth and passed on. It belongs to the earth, and it really has no harm. It doesn't like to be disturbed late at night for some reason, but it actually can feed off of your energy. So if you walk in there with, you know, a really positive attitude, your positive attitude gets amplified because this creature really feeds off of it. Vice versa, if you walk in there with a negative attitude, that creature will feed into that negative attitude and amplify it, and you'll kind of continue to grow and get more angry or anxious or, you know, whatever you're feeling, this creature intensifies it.
The 40th Film Festival is a new celebration of cinema, created by people who have a passion for all things weird and paranormal. The current season is now open for submissions. Get involved if you're a filmmaker that has a penchant for poltergeists and adores aliens, or if you're a producer devoted to demonology with a soft spot for sci-fi. The deadline for submissions to this IMDb-approved festival is fast approaching. Go to www.fortianfilmfestival.com to submit your film or buy tickets, if you dare.
So we had both talked about how it feels like that energy, whatever this is, kind of creeps up from the basement. And so she explained that to her mom. And her mom, I'm not quite familiar with symbols and Reiki symbols, but her mom put up these symbols apparently in the basement that keeps this creature there. And I'll tell you, the day she did it, it was night and day. You walked in the back door where we all come in from, and you just knew like it was going to stay down in the basement. It wasn't going to come up the stairs. And now, like, I acknowledge it. Like, I'll say, hi, how are you? It's just kind of weird. I don't think I've actually ever told my manager about it, but if he listens to this podcast, eventually he'll know now. But yeah, it was super, super weird. So I met through Instagram a girl who deals with Reiki healing and energy healing. And, you know, I just believe that the universe really puts people in our path and removes them from our path when it's time. And our paths, you know, totally connected through the Instagram platform. And I didn't know initially that she was into energy healing or anything like that. And then eventually I saw something she had posted about and was curious about what she was doing, and eventually just booked an hour with her. I thought, you know, I've heard about Reiki a few times now in my life. And the first few times I was ever introduced to it, I just thought it was very woo-woo-y. Again, I'm a very science background, so I'm always fighting my logical brain. And something was just kind of calling me to this, though. And I just kind of trusted that inner voice. I was just like, just do it. Whatever happens will happen. Who cares? If anything, you're just supporting her business. And if that's the worst thing that comes out of this, so be it. So anyways, we did this session, and at the time I had moved again and I was in a new house. I'd only been here for a few months, and I knew we had a ghost in the house. I don't know if it had come with the house or what. I just knew we had a male ghost in the house. He was not harmful, but he like really liked to move things around the house on me. And he'd wait to the point that I would get frustrated. Like, I know I put that there. Where is it? You know, and you're just pacing around the house, getting flustered, and time's ticking by, and you got somewhere to be. And then all of a sudden there it is. It's where you left it, but it wasn't for the past 10, 15 minutes. So when I did this session with her, she had said, you know, are you aware that you have a ghost in your house? And I was like, yeah, how do you know that? You know, because I didn't talk about it with anybody other than with my housemate. And she's like, do you know it's a male? And I said, yeah, I kind of got that feeling that it was a masculine energy. And she said, well, you know, he just doesn't kind of know how to move on. And I said, okay. She said, but he really enjoys your company. He finds that you're funny. He really means you no harm in moving things around your house, but he just finds it amusing. He kind of likes to, you know, get your blood going. And I just thought, I have no idea how this girl knows this, but this is bang on what I've been experiencing. So I said to her, I don't have an issue with him being there, but if he wants to move forward and doesn't know how, can we help him move forward? And that's exactly actually what we did. And I felt his spirit move forward. It was a really moving experience. It was, you know, nothing but happiness, but it was just really, really quite a moving experience for myself, and really solidified to me through a lot of things that she had said in our session, you know, just healing and unblocking chakras and working through cutting cords of emotional ties that I had been carrying. I had no idea. I had been carrying so many other people's baggage. You know, I had my own baggage, but I was carrying other people's baggage as well. And so when we cleared all that, it was like somebody just took another person off of me in terms of just that weight coming off of my chest and my shoulders. She gave me some tools to practice to, you know, help open up my gifts. You know, she was like, you are very, you know, she's like, you're clairvoyant because you do see things. You're very sensitive to feelings. She helped me learn to build and push my aura out so that I could give myself a barrier and protect myself from having other people's feelings attached to me. In my 20s, I was dealing with a lot of negative energy, and I thought a lot of it was mine. I didn't understand it, and I didn't know who to talk to about it or where to look for answers about it. But through my session with her, I had come to learn a lot of what I was experiencing wasn't all mine. And so for the better part of now 2 years, I've definitely been practicing the things and tools that she's given me to be a lot more protective of my own energy, but helping others as well. I've now, since doing that, I've heightened, I think, my gifts. I definitely have more experiences. I see a lot more. A lot of it is out of my peripheral vision, but I definitely, through feeling, again, I'm very heightened to feeling. Like I just know when something is there and when it's not. And if I've seen something because it's there, or it's just, you know, something moved quickly, you know, that's explainable, you know, just within your peripheral vision. My last story, and I think probably one of my neatest experiences that I have no idea to this day what happened, but I was actually driving along one of our highways out here, and the highways out here are just pitch black. I know in a lot of urban areas, highways tend to have street lights, but out here, it is your headlights and the moon if it's not cloudy. It is just pitch black out here. So I am driving south along Highway 95, and I'm actually heading out to my boyfriend at the time. He lived about 65 kilometers from where I lived and was in quite a remote area. So, you know, it was kind of nice to get to his place on my days off for just like some peace and quiet. And as this highway meanders along the Columbia wetlands, and it's like the largest protected wetlands in Western Canada. And, you know, in the summer, it's teeming with wildlife and birds. And again, it's pitch black. So I'm just driving under, you know, and all I can see is what my headlights are showing me. It's a clear night out. I can see the moon. I can see stars. And the highway is 100 kilometers an hour. So I'm doing that, or maybe about 10 over. But, you know, I'm barreling down the highway. And right to the right side of me, over the wetlands, this light catches up with my car. And it is very luminous, but it's not bright. It's not lighting up things around it. It's not lighting up anything below it. It's just itself is luminous. Again, like I'm driving, so I can't like stare at it. I need to pay attention to the highway. And so, you know, I'm just kind of like as if you're checking your mirrors, you know, really quick looking at this. I don't know if it had been going faster than me and slowed down to my speed or caught up to me, but it flew alongside my vehicle. Maybe for a total of 2-3 seconds, but long enough for me to like look at it, know that it was a ball of light, and be like, what the heck is that? And then it was gone. And it wasn't like it shot up or it, you know, fell down. It just didn't exist anymore. It just wasn't there. And it was, you know, like I've seen tons of falling stars and comets, and you know, every year if the sky is clear, I watch the Perseides meteor shower. Like I love looking up at the night sky, especially out here with how dark it is, the amount of stars you can see and the Milky Way, like it's just incredible. So, you know, I am familiar with satellites moving and things like this, but this was a ball of light flying basically, you know, 100 feet out from my vehicle going parallel with me. And I remember getting to my boyfriend's and telling him about it, but his reaction was just kind of like, huh, you know, and then there was just nothing after that. So I never made a huge deal about it. And in fact, I actually had forgotten about it until I had listened to one of your episodes where somebody had described the same ball of light. And I just thought, oh my God, that is exactly what I saw. This isn't just me. I'm not unique to that experience, which is great. It makes me not feel crazy. But I just thought, yeah, that's exactly what I saw. Like I couldn't have described it better myself. And I've now, of course, having listened to your podcast for, I think it's, gosh, been a year, I've heard that description now a number of times. I have no idea what that is. I told my mom about it, which is unique because I don't usually talk to my parents about these sort of experiences. Not because I don't think they'll believe me, but I just, you know, I think they believe that I've experienced it, but I don't think they believe that it's real. Like, I don't know how to explain that. But so I told my mom about it anyways. And I even said to her, I was like, you might think I'm crazy, but like, this really did happen. I just wanted to share this with you. She, at the end of it, was like, was there an accident on that highway that day? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, that was quite a, you know, this is probably like 5 or 6 years ago now. And I said, I don't recall, but these highways are quite deadly. And it's not uncommon for, you know, fatal accidents happening out here. And she's like, I just think that was your guardian angel and it kept you from something. Like it either got you where you needed to be faster or it delayed you from getting there so that you missed something. And I was like, well, that's possible. You know, it's certainly, now that I've brought it back to the forefront of my mind, not an experience I will forget again. I think I forgot about it just because initially, like I said, my boyfriend at the time, he was just so dismissive of it. And I don't think he did that to be rude or that he didn't believe me. It was just, yeah, it was like, it wasn't meant to register in his brain what I was telling him for some reason. I don't know. But I still to this day continue to have experiences regularly, whether they're in my home or when I'm about out and about in my work life. I have been told from people in this area that because a lot of the mountain peaks are very triangular here, there is very strong energy vortex in this area. I know individuals who have spotted unexplainable things in the skies. There's a local in the area who has claimed to have experiences with Sasquatch, you know, so, or Bigfoot. I know there's lots of different terminology for them. I call them Sam Squanch. That's just my little pet name for them. But there is something about this area that I really need to look into more in terms of like this energy corridor. Where I am in BC, I'm actually closer to the Alberta border than I am the coast of British Columbia. And so we're located right between the Rocky Mountains, the Selkirk Mountain Range, and the Purcell Mountain Range. So we're very nestled into these huge mountain ranges that are very also considered very spiritual, and by a lot of the indigenous in our areas as well. We have a lot of First Nations in the area that have very sacred grounds as well. And so you do hear a lot of different stories from locals out in this area, which just, you know, kind of helps to make you feel like, okay, yeah, like I'm not, sometimes you just feel crazy. I think that's why we don't talk about these experiences a lot. And we're selective with who we talk about them with, because I don't think anybody wants to be considered crazy. But yeah, those are my stories so far in my life.
Interesting. Some interesting ones there.
Yeah, right? Like they're just, it's like I said, been scattered throughout my life. I've never had anything like super traumatic or terrifying, you know, to scare me away from a lot of this stuff. In fact, as I get older, I just become more intrigued with it. You know, I'm still somebody who does believe in the Catholic faith, but I am also very open-minded to the unexplained things. You know, I think for me, growing up in the Catholic faith, you know, I was always taught to believe in something I can't touch or see. And so for me, it's an easy connection to be like, well, yeah, there's something else. There's more to this. There's just more to the black and white picture that a lot of people try to paint our world.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're right. Nobody wants to get labeled the local nutter by sharing these stories. But, you know,
yeah,
everybody has them. And everyone knows if they haven't had something, they know someone that has.
Yes, absolutely. And it's nice connecting with those people and hearing their stories. That's what I love about your show. It's the individual telling their story, and you can hear their emotions. You can feel their experience through their story because it is so genuine to them. It's what I love about listening to your podcast. You don't get this feeling that it's just somebody trolling, you know, for a little airtime. It's these people who have had these amazing and interesting encounters, and I'm so open to hearing it all.
Me too. I love hearing about people's accounts, and I love some of the backstories people have as well. You know, especially when it's era based, when it was in the 60s and 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, and there's a little bit of character in there as well. You know, I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely! I love hearing that stuff, and you know, I think as we move through time, people are becoming more acceptant of it. I think people are starting to also not ignore their experiences or experiences that others that they know and trust and love have had. Whereas things back in the 60s and 50s were very taboo. And if you had these stories, you kind of were labeled the town nut and then discredited, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And, you know, I think you're the first encounter we've really, like, paranormal accounts we've had, which has been in a ski resort. So I think it's the first time.
Yeah, and if you talk to other long-term ski resort employees, they'll tell you the same for it, regardless of where they work. And I think that is just due to the fact that unfortunately there are fatal accidents that happen at these locations, and I do think sometimes people don't know when they've passed on, you know, necessarily. I think there's a lot we just don't understand to after this life. You know, like I believe that our energy continues to exist. Of course, you know, I was brought up with the heaven and hell concept, and I do believe in an afterlife. You know, what that entails, I'll find out, I'm sure. But I just think there's so much that we don't understand, and maybe we're not meant to. And that's, I mean, I kind of like that. There's a little bit of magic in that. I think everybody needs a little magic in their life.
Yeah, I agree. Ski resort, you know, you're right. It is a dangerous place. I've snowboarded before. It is fast and it's dangerous. And I'd imagine on a ski resort, you know, people are going at some considerable speed, you know, and there's trees in the way. And if someone was to have an accident, which they do in these places, then yeah, it would be very quick and they probably wouldn't even know what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do think that happens sometimes, you know, you just suddenly pass away and I don't know if your soul just doesn't recognize that, or there was something you were supposed to finish doing. Who knows? I'm always open to people's ideas and thoughts behind that. I think it's just such an interesting topic, but you know, and I love hearing people's near-death experiences, and, you know, if they've had an experience and what they've experienced in that, whether it be that they saw a light or whatever. I think, you know, everything is unique to the individual, but I just think there's a lot more than, you know, this, you know, the image that gets very painted by a lot of people, you know, just because I think not knowing something and not understanding something leads to fear. And I think as people, what we tend to fear, we tend to avoid because nobody likes to be scared. So, and movies and TV, you know, they certainly play up things, you know, just for the sole intention of capturing their audience. But they really, I think, glorify things that aren't really true, you know, paranormal experiences, albeit people definitely do have some terrifying experiences, but it's not like these ghost hunter shows, if you know what I mean, where they're always like invoking and, you know, and antagonizing, you know, these bad spirits. You know, I think that's just a lot of television entertainment and not what the majority of us are experiencing.
The TV, exactly, the TV.
Yeah.
To our listeners out there, if you've heard three knocks, it doesn't mean it's a demon.
Well, and that's exactly it. You know, television certainly brings people to, you know, an exorcism looks like, you know, the exorcist that, you know, the original exorcist that comes out, and that it doesn't look any different. And yeah, like you said, three knocks means it's a demon. And, you know, I definitely believe in good and evil. I do fit, but I also think on the evil side of things, you know, it's a little bit more clever than three knocks or three scratches or.
They always go on to TV and they say the three knocks is the mocking of the Trinity.
Yes.
My Amazon guy knocked today and that was three knocks. but I answered it. I answered it, you know, because I was expecting it, but still.
You didn't have a crucifix and a bottle of holy water.
He's my usual guy, so he's okay. Now, it was elemental. You're thinking of the ancient spirit.
Yes. Yes, that's the name. Thank you.
Yeah, elementals, earth spirits. And yeah, you're right, they are ancient spirits. We had one on our property years and years ago. I never really had much to do with it, but we did have a psychic lady which came around and said, you know, you have an elemental here.
Yeah, and that is my first encounter so far with one of them. And I just thought, well, that makes sense and cool.
I know in Southeast Asia, they have a thing where you don't pee on trees, you don't urinate on a tree because every tree has a spirit that lives within the tree.
Ah, so I like that.
Yeah.
I like that thought.
So respect nature.
And, you know, that's something that has always been a part of who I am. I've always had an affinity for nature and animals in general. Like, I help with a wildlife rescue at the moment. And, you know, we take all sorts of animals, birds, and we get deer and elk and no carnivores at this time. Just we're not set up for it. But, you know, squirrels and just lots of small mammals and birds, and I have always been in a field where I have helped animals, healed animals, and I have always just felt so much more connected to animals and the land than I do people. You know, when I was having that energy healing session, she said to me, she's like, man, you have so many guardians. Yeah, I thought so. You know, I feel like I never feel alone. And she's like, no, she's like, you even have animal guardians. There's not just angels and ancestors. She's like, you have so many animals around you. She's like, I get now why I see all these birds, not just in your current physical life, but in your spirit world as well. She's, you are just very connected to, you know, the earth and that energy and the energy of animals and just like the interconnectedness of our planet and all of that. She's like, I get a lot of visions of healing. And I said, yeah, well, I mean, you know, I rescue animals and help them heal and send them on their way, you know? And she's, you're just a natural born healer, which has led me to start looking into, wow, like, I mean, how do you learn Reiki therapy? And is that something I could develop and do myself in the way of just you know, helping these animals more is my thought. Helping myself and people too, but I'm just always on the plane of just helping the creatures around. And no matter where I am, animals will find me if they need help. They just literally fall in front of me. Like in 2020, before the pandemic happened, my family and I had gone on a wonderful family vacation. There was actually like 21 of us that managed to get away. And we went down to Jamaica and we were all just sitting out on the beach, you know, having a good time. And right beside me, a baby pigeon falls out of the tree right beside me. And I look over and I was, yeah, of course that happens to me on vacation. All right, then. I literally went and got supplies and like nursed the bird and then found like a local gardener or something that could help. I mean, because this bird fell from quite a tall palm tree, but a lot of these gardener guys are pretty crafty at climbing palm trees anyway. So yeah, he eventually got them back up there for me, but I was just, yep, still helping out even when I'm trying to be on vacation.
On call 24 hours a day.
That's right. Yeah, in the animal world, it's not a 9-to-5 thing. It's outside of the most random hours kind of thing.
And if they're in need, they're in need. Wonderful. I mean, anyone that hasn't got time for animals, you know, I don't have time for you.
Absolutely. And if my dog is skeptical about you, I'm going to be skeptical about you too.
They know stuff.
Yes. Yeah, they absolutely do. I mean, bless them. My dogs, I think sometimes they're probably like, God, she brought home another animal again. Because they have to get along with whatever it is I bring into my house. And it just, you know, they look at me like, really, Mom?
Like Dr. Dolittle.
You got it. Absolutely. And I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly. I wouldn't give it up for any other life.
But Reiki, you know, I've only heard good things about Reiki. I know quite a few of my listeners have taken courses in Reiki, and it's good for healing and helping people, especially if people have suffered trauma as well in their life, you know, and have this baggage that kind of needs to get cleared, which it does, doesn't it? You know, you can't carry this stuff through your whole life.
Yeah, and that was just something I never even, you know, like I just didn't even know it was possible that you could be carrying around somebody else's energy, whether it be good or bad, you know, and I, and some of us, I guess, are just a little bit more like Velcro to that. And that was me. And, you know, I look back in my 20s when I struggled emotionally. I felt very unsettled a lot of the time. I did a lot of uprooting of my life because I didn't understand what I was going through. You know, I quit my job and went back to college and sold my house and moved out of the province and across the country. You know, my family's 4,000 kilometers away from me. But there was something that was just not, it wasn't aligning with my belief, my life or my energy. And it started to get better when I moved out here. You know, I started to break patterns that kind of held me just kind of stuck in that energy. And, you know, common thing people out here say is, you know, the mountains shall bring peace to the people. And absolutely they do. I don't know what it is about the energy of mountains, but they really truly have this way of humbling us. And I love that people out here very much respect the land and seem a little bit more connected to nature than, you know, where I was from and just, you know, living in a city. And just that city life and being very just, you know, your nature was the park where you took your dog to after work, you know, that was that. And, you know, it wasn't till, like I said, the pandemic really, it was kind of how I started to learn about energy and unblocking things and letting go. And so I always joked when the pandemic happened, I mean, you know, it's been such a tumultuous couple years. I'm very much an introvert. And I think that stems from, you know, how I can very much pick up people's energy and I can walk into a room and I'm very affected by the energy in that room. So, you know, I'm very much a homebody. And, you know, in the beginning of the pandemic, I was just like living my best introverted life. But, you know, I started to, it allowed me though the time, you know, not being at work as much, but, you know, being able to like really dig into myself and really dig into these other ideas about how things are going and connected, and trusting my intuition to lead me on that journey, and not just like, that seems very woo-woo, I'm not going to go down that avenue. Just being like, okay, well, let's be a little bit more open-minded. What is this? Because like I said, I'm a science background, and my brain tries to be very logical a lot. So it is fighting that logical side, where I think most of our brains try to go anyways. But I'll say that since having that energy healing session and then diving into learning about energies and, you know, that whole avenue of Reiki has really helped to just let go all that last little bit of negative energy that wasn't mine. And being able to now just like recognizing things and being like, okay, that's not mine. Let that go. This is mine. Deal with it, you know, and then move forward.
Exactly. Use the recycle bin. Get rid of this bad negative energy. You don't need it.
Exactly. Turn that into something positive and send it back out.
Send it back out to the universe.
That's right. Yeah. Put more good energy out there. You know, I like to get rid of the negative, but I don't want to pass it on to somebody else. So try to transmute that into something positive so that it goes back into the, you know, like I said, energy just doesn't cease to exist. So if I'm just, I think we got to learn recognizing negative energy, but don't just get rid of it. Transmute it so that when you let go of it, it's going out and it won't cause anybody else harm.
Sound advice, that is sound advice. Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange. You also used to be an educator, didn't you, about animal attacks?
So I used to educate about specifically grizzly bears. We live in bear country here. And I would share with people basically how bears exist and, you know, their MO in life and how they're surviving and thriving, their challenges, the space that they need, the food that they need to eat. Because of course, you know, the Western Canada and the Rockies is very tourism driven, and 98% of the people who will come out here all say they want to see a bear. Why'd you come to Canada? I want to see a bear. Okay, well, do you know what to do if you ever encounter a bear? And, you know, a lot of people, it's funny. I think the common answer is, well, you run and I just have to run faster than the person I'm with. You know, and I just think, you know, like I laugh and think, oh, dude, you know, you're clearly not hanging out with people you love very much if you just need to outrun the people you're with. But, you know, people with wildlife specifically, just do some silly behaviors around animals, not thinking that they can get harmed. And my biggest mission was to not tell people animals are so dangerous and scary and you have to be afraid of them and avoid them. My mission was to teach people how to be smart about being around those animals. Because the way I look at it is if I'm hiking or recreating in bear country, I'm in their home. So I need to be respectful the way I would be if I went to, you know, my mom and dad's house. You know, I'm not going to just put my feet on the coffee table with my dirty shoes on. You know, there's rules to every home. And so I would teach people the rules about being in a bear's home, which is the wilderness. You know, and bear attacks, yeah, they happen, but maybe 6 a year in all of Canada. And we do have bears pretty much right across our country. So I just wanted people to be smart, you know, not be attracting wildlife because of food and things like that. So ultimately, what I always saw here is, you know, if people were misbehaving around wildlife, allowing wildlife to get human-sourced foods, those animals always ended up dead. And those tourists never saw the results of their actions. So, you know, always felt it was kind of my mission to be like, you know, the voice for them and be like, look it, yes, they can be dangerous, but they don't want to tangle with you. You're not food. You're not on the menu. We're not that tasty of a meal to most wildlife. So, you know, don't chase after them with your camera and put your food away. And, you know, if you're tent camping, don't have those sorts of things in your tent with you, and, you know, clean up your campsites and, you know, just general custodial manners when being in bear country, just so that everybody could have a peaceful coexistence. You know, you get to enjoy nature and the beauty around it and the wildlife that lives within it. And they also can continue to live their very tough survivalist lifestyles while you're there and well beyond that you're there. You know, I think a lot of people just, they either really fear predatory animals or they have zero fear of predatory animals, and there's kind of not an in between. And I just always just tried to find that middle ground for everybody. You don't need to be fearful of them. You just need to understand and respect them. And you also can't just walk up to them and, you know, put your kid beside them and take a photo.
Which they have done. So it's all about respecting the environment you're in. It really is their environment. And I know I do have a lot of listeners that like to go trekking and go on walks and sometimes actually listen to the show while they're deep in the wilderness. My advice would be maybe keep one of the ear pads in and maybe one out, just so you can hear what's trailing you behind you. Be careful.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I do encounter people with headphones in the bush. And hey, I love music. I love podcasts. But I also think that nature has a really cool soundtrack. And I like to listen to that soundtrack as well. Also, people don't realize how very silent bears actually are in the woods. They think because they're so large and cumbersome looking, it would be really easy to hear them come through, you know, the brush and the trees. But their foot pads are like 3 inches thick. So they have a very padded step, and they can evenly distribute their weight amongst all their joints so that, you know, they're not, I mean, like if one walks past you, don't get me wrong, you can feel the ground move. You know, I've been blessed to, you know, have a grizzly bear walk past me in quite a short distance, and, you know, and nothing scary happened. I mean, she was literally just needing the exact same trail I was on, and I was just kind of in her way. So I just got out of the way, and she just trotted right past me until I couldn't see her anymore. And then I got back up on the trail. But they're just so silent, you know, and they're camouflaged within nature. So they're not easily spotted either. You know, people think, well, they're so big, how could you miss that out there? But the color of their coat is designed to be camouflaged to the background that they live in so that they aren't easily seen. You know, although there aren't any other animals out hunting bears, we forget that, you know, people hunt bears. You know, bears are considered a food source for a lot of Canadians. Grizzly bears are not allowed to be hunted in Canada, but black bears are hunted for food. And, you know, bears are aware we are the animal hunting them. So they really don't want to encounter us any more than most of us want to encounter them.
So if someone comes across a bear, what is the best thing to do? Everyone knows about making yourself small. Now, is it, do you run away? Do you stop? Do you back away?
So it depends if you're encountering a black bear versus a grizzly bear. Black bears are smaller. You know, they're usually not. I've seen some big black bears because they've gotten into garbage dumps or local garbage sites. But, you know, usually they're not more than about 300 pounds. I mean, that's a large animal, but they're not, you know, grizzly bears in this area, you know, they can get upwards of 1,000 pounds in the fall when the salmon are spawning and they have access to all that protein. But with black bears, typically you just kind of want to like, now I don't have a normal reaction. Whenever I see a bear, I'm always like, hi. And I don't, like, that's just my natural reaction, is just to like say hi, as if I were to see somebody at the grocery store, just like, hi. And then from that reaction is my next reaction. So if that bear just like looks at me and runs away, I'm like, all right, cool. I'm clear to keep walking down the path that I'm on. I've been given the green light to stay where I am. If the bear doesn't move along and kind of continues to check me out, I do want to remain calm. I always carry bear spray with me in bear country. It is a very effective tool in the event that a bear decided to charge you. And a bluff charge is an intimidating move, and bears will run at you quickly and stop just a mere 3-4 feet from you. And it's intimidating. Like, there's no question about that. But it is designed exactly to be intimidating. And what they're trying to do when they do that is invoke a reaction out of you. And that's why bear spray was actually invented. It was invented for that instant where a bear charges you. You spray them directly in the face with that bear spray, and it will stop that charge. A bear has one of the most sensitive noses on the planet. And when that spray hits their sensitive nose, it really just kind of scrambles the signals that are getting to their brain. And then they're very uncomfortable. I mean, hopefully your listeners have never had mace in the face, but it's similar to that. It's just a more potent formula. And it is, there's a bit of an oil to it so that it's heavy when you spray it out of the can. It'll hold in the air for a number of minutes. It'll make it through a bush, you know, if you had to spray it through a bush. So, it, you know, it's designed to be quite useful in a quick situation. So, you know, I'm never in bear country without that. Now, in the event that a bear does charge me, you know, and I spray my can off and they don't go away, you know, I'll spray my can until it's emptied. Rarely does that happen, that somebody needs to spray more than once, that bear doesn't take off. I talk to the bears calmly, let them know, like, I'm not a threat. You know, if the bear seems curious, because younger bears that haven't had enough life lessons don't maybe necessarily understand how to interact with us, and their curiosity can be perceived as that they're not afraid of us. And bears have to be taught to fear us. They're not born with a natural instinct to fear us. You know, they have to coexist with all sorts of animals, including other bears out there. So they are really good at problem solving and conflict dealing. You know, conflict in their world leads to injury, and that can lead to death. So ultimately, these guys are really good at getting around conflict. Younger bears, like I said, they're just curious, and sometimes they'll get a little bit closer. So that's when I'll get a little bit more firm in my tone and just kind of like, hey, you know, go away. I'm not interesting. Back off. And now really what you say doesn't necessarily matter. It's more the tone that you're inflecting towards them. If it was a grizzly bear, it would be different. You know, of course, if I had my can of bear spray with me, that's, you know, going to be in my hand and ready to be used. But if a grizzly bear is intent on actually harming, I will actually play dead. That's where that rule of like, you just want to like drop to the ground, protect your extremities and play dead. And that only because with a grizzly bear, you're not overpowering them. Whereas with a black bear, if they were intent on actually attacking, I was always trained to fight back with whatever I could, whether it be a large stick or a heavy rock, you're to fight back. And there's a lot of stories of people who've been attacked by black bears and did exactly that. They fought back, managed to put the bear on the defensive, and then the bear is like, nope, that's it, I'm out of here. Now, I mean, not an easy situation to be in by any means, but you certainly don't want to run. And the reason you don't want to run is because if they weren't going to chase you, running will just invoke a natural game of chase. Our dogs will exhibit this at home. You know, you run from them in the backyard and they're like, oh, you're running from me, I'm going to chase you. Any predatory animal, if you run from them, they're just going to get that, you know, invoked game of chase going. So you never want to run. But also, most importantly, you're just simply never outrunning a bear. As big as they are, they can reach a speed of about 50 kilometers or 35 miles per hour. And they can cover that a large area of ground in a very short period of time. And interestingly, as big as they are, they can hold that speed for over a mile. So, you know, it's not these little short bursts of speed and then that's it. I mean, they can endure a good run. They are considered one of the most successful solitary hunters on the planet. Grizzly bears being able to take down large game like moose and elk or deer on their own. You know, they're not a pack animal. They're not family oriented. You know, a cub will only be with her mother bear. The father is never around. Male bears pose one of the biggest risks to young cubs. So it's just being very aware of your surroundings, knowing whether or not you're in bear country, black bear country versus grizzly bear country, identifying their key food sources, which is 90% plant matter. And being a noisy human is the best way to avoid ever encountering a bear at all. You know, if you're just making noise as you're, you know, hiking or trekking or whatever, that's just going to alert them to you being around. No one's going to be surprised. And then you're not going to have, you know, an interaction that is, you know, fear-based. Because more than likely, if they know you're coming, they're going to move out of the area and you'll not even know that they were there. And if they don't want you there, they're not going to leave. And that's your cue to be like, cool, so I'm not allowed here. I'll leave. I've had that happen where I've just come across bears, or well, it was a black bear, and he was just really intent on eating this patch of dandelions. It's an important source of vitamin C for them early spring. And he didn't want to leave, you know, like he wasn't aggressive, but he knew I was there. He looked at me dead on and he just didn't leave. So I thought, well, all right, I guess I leave then. And I didn't turn around. And I didn't turn my back on him because I just didn't want to, you know, not have him within my eyesight in case he got curious about me. So I just backed out of that area until, you know, the brush and the trees kind of obscured his vision of me. And then I just, you know, turned around and went back where, you know, the direction I'd come in. So all my encounters with bears have always been very gracious. They're really I don't know if they're understanding, but they're very accepting of, you know, just how clumsy and kind of foolish we can be out in the wilderness. And they really just don't want any trouble. You know, and you see that even, you know, on the news when there's a bear in the middle of the road and she's got her cubs with her and everybody's, you know, out of their vehicles with cameras and they're close, you know, and all. I think most of us see that going, what are these people doing? But if bears were the violent, unpredictable animals that they're so tailored to be in media and movies, then those situations would end a lot more differently than they do. And they often end with no one being harmed. Those bears move along and eventually cross the road and somebody's taken about 1,000 photos of them, you know? So, and that's kind of, you know, what we like to see is people shooting bears with their cameras and not the other way around, shooting bears out of defense because of misunderstanding. Or mismanagement of livestock.
And that's wonderful advice. You know, I really hope that, you know, helps someone out there. And yeah, if you get into contact with a bear, put down your picnic basket and slowly back away.
You know, and that's it too. If you got food on you and they're kind of interested, like, you let the food go. It's okay. You can go to the grocery store.
Yeah, it's no big deal. What's a couple of Twinkies?
Absolutely. It's the people who intentionally feed the wildlife. You know, you see videos of people like hand feeding sandwiches to bears and, you know, and they think it's funny and they think it's great. And it's like, you have just handed that bear a death sentence. You know, bears are the masters of finding the most easy food. That's what they want. I mean, I love an easy meal. I don't know who doesn't. And, you know, if bears make the association that people mean a handout, either through garbage or physically being fed, they'll return and return and return. And this is where we see bears that get destroyed in the news because they're just looking for that handout. And it worked once. So why wouldn't it work again? You know, they do what works, not what doesn't.
And that's what the signs are for. Don't feed the wildlife.
And that's exactly it. And I think if most people understood that, because you know what? They're amazing to see. I understand why people want to see them. But we definitely, those of us who live in bear country and appreciate their role in nature, we just want to see them continue to, you know, play out their role and allow, have people generation after generation be able to come to these beautiful areas and experience that magic for themselves.
Wonderful. Good job.
Well, thank you. Like, I get so sucked into your episodes and they're just like such a great thing. Like for me, like I said, I'm alone a lot at night. So they're just such a great thing to help me get through a shift and listening to people's stories are just awesome. So, you know, I'm all caught up. I've listened to all your episodes that you have released so far. So now it's me on the week going, okay, what's next?
I had an email of a guy a few days ago and he said, you know, I listened to all your episodes. So then I had to try and find another podcast to listen to until, you know, Sunday, until like a new episode comes out. He goes, but I tried him, but I didn't like it. So I came back and started listening to the old archive episodes again. So it's good.
I share his sentiment because I've been the same. I've been trying a couple other podcasts and I'm like, it's just not the same. It's not the same. You've got a good energy about your podcast for sure. And it definitely, the way you introduce everything and tie everything together, it's got a good flow. So keep it up. You're doing a great job.
Nicole, I really appreciate you for coming on and sharing those experiences with our listeners today.
Thank you very much for having me. And as I said, keep up the great work because I'm a listener for as long as you have this podcast going.
And judging from my guess, it's going to be a long time yet.
Awesome. That's great. Because you know what? Keep the stories coming. It keeps me entertained.
That's wonderful. Okay. You take care and you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much. You as well.
Okay. Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. And also, if you have emailed me already and not yet received a reply back, please check your spam box as I may have been diverted there. A big thank you to Nicole for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.